College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Outside the studio, the morning air is starting to get crisp here in the Northeast. There's nothing better than the fall season here in Connecticut. Sun's out, but it feels like the air conditioner's on outside. Perfect college football weather. Week four is upon us, and we've got some great matchups. David Pollock joining us to break down the big games as he always does on Fridays. Pollock, how you feeling?
Man, it is go time. There's so many good games. It's a buffet this weekend. So let's just sit down and enjoy and watch all day long. If you got chores, it's the wrong Saturday. So tell your wife you're going to get it done on Sunday. Sit in front of the TV all day long and just watch all these games. It's beautiful.
And we're going to get the Saturday slate in a moment. I want to start here for tonight. A key matchup, Utah traveling to USC. Tough loss for the Trojans in Provo this past weekend, but this is critical. This is critical for the Pac-12. Utah comes in undefeated. They're favored by 4 points. What's your initial thoughts when you look at this matchup?
Well, I'll tell you what, initially my first thought would be for Utah's defense. I love their defense. I love their front seven and how physical they are. If you don't have multiple corners, again, that can cover all these USC receivers that are going to throw the football all the over the yard. And listen, Slovis kind of came back down to earth. He looked more like a freshman, didn't he? He looked more human. And now we saw Gabriel, by the way, UCF freshman, look out of this world, by the way, against Stanford, too. So we might have to pump the brakes a little bit on what we thought, and that's why there's more games and more reaction. But I just want to see the defense for Utah. This will show me if the defense is real. I have no doubt they'll be able to score some points and they'll be able to be physical against USC. But defensively, are they going to be good enough in the secondary, in the slots, to be able to cover USC's receivers and explosive offense? Because I know they're going to be physical and I know they're going to be tough. I think this will tell me if Utah's got a chance to make the college football playoff.
You make a great point, though, about Slovis coming back to earth also, because he was on the road, his first road test in that environment in Provo, which was great, and I thought that game was fantastic, the back and forth. To me, him coming back home and the idea that he looked great in that second half against Stanford, we got to figure things out on what that really means, considering where we've seen Stanford and what they've done so far this season. Disappointing start for the Cardinal. For me, I look at Utah's offense and Huntley and Moss. Are you comfortable with this team and the idea that they can make a run here to the playoff with the way this offense is constructed?
I think it's still growing. I think it'll still continue to get better. Anytime you switch coordinators, it's going to be something that takes some time. But I'm very comfortable with what I've seen from Huntley. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that sets the world on fire. But when you talk about completion percentage, over 81 last week, you know, over 73, you know, 74, over 78 in week one. I mean, you're talking about literally completing at least 7 out of 10 passes and being ultra efficient. He's not going to throw the ball. BYU's formula is not throw the ball 55 times. Like we talked about the other day with LSU and Alabama just chucking the ball all over the yard. That's not who they are and what they are. That's not what they want to be. He doesn't have to run this year as much either. He doesn't have to take as many shots as we've seen him take in the past. I think he's very efficient within this offense. Moss is a physical downhill guy. Last week you saw receivers making big plays for Huntley because it wasn't just dink and dunk low yardage. Last week was the first time you saw some explosive plays down the field of big game, big chunk yards. But I think that's what you want to see. Thompson at receiver and Moss at running back and maybe some more explosive elements. But, yeah, I'm comfortable because I think they know who they are. And I don't think Huntley is ever going to be a guy that wants to throw the ball or needs to throw the ball 30 times a game, 40 times a game like Slovis. I mean, think about it. Slovis has 75 attempts. Huntley has 54 attempts. Like, this is completely opposite styles of play. And they're going to be all season long.
If Huntley throws the ball more than 25 to 30 times, then you have to be worried about where the game is and what's going on. I mean, because that's just not who he is. That's just not how the style is. So who you got in this game, this Utah-USC matchup?
I like Utah. I like Utah. Here's the thing that we've said about the Helton error for USC, and this is not taking shots at anybody. what I've seen from this group consistently is not enough grown-ups in the trenches that are going to slap people around and not enough meanness. Okay. I don't see enough of that consistently. Utah's got some streak in them. They got some dirt bag in them, which is good. That's not a bad thing, by the way. They got some people that don't like people. Like I want to go recruit guys that don't like people, especially defensively. You got to be able to hunt and play hard and have a little nasty disposition to you. And I see more of that with Utah. I trust Utah more than I trust USC. So I give Utah the edge, and I think they'll win the ball game.
All right, huge matchup here as we talk about Saturday games too. Let's dip into that noon contest and Michigan is going on the road at Wisconsin. Last time we saw Michigan, they were taken to overtime, and they were feeling tight in the
big
house.
They had a bye week. They fixed everything, Kevin.
Yeah, you think so?
Fixed everything. They're good.
Yeah. There's a lot of storylines in this contest, too, because they're traveling here. They're going to Madison, and the Wolverines are 1-5 on the road against ranked opponents under Jim Harbaugh. When you see this game, and obviously, you're being sarcastic with the bye and trying to fix some of the things in the offense. What is the one thing that stands out in this matchup?
Do you think we had ever started this season at any point and gone, when Michigan and Wisconsin play each other in week four of college football, that Shea Patterson would have less yards than Cone for Wisconsin?
No way. Not with all the hype this offseason, right?
Would you
right?
say that? Absolutely not, right? I mean, Cone literally, I don't even know his name yet because we hadn't heard about him yet, but he has been the model of efficiency so far, by the way. Doesn't have to be asked to do a lot. Hasn't turned the football over yet. The opposite of what Shea Patterson. Like, right now, Michigan, I feel like, could use this guy. I mean, that's how bad Shea Patterson has been to start the season. And I know Gattis came over to change the offense. It doesn't look much different than it did. They're not pushing people around up front. So I don't know how Michigan's going to win this game. I wonder what they figure out offensively. Listen, they got to run Shea Patterson more. He's a running back. I mean, use him in his athleticism. If you don't, I don't see how you win ball games. You have to get that extra advantage with the quarterback either being a blocker in the option game and or in the zone read game or I think you're going to get beat up. I just think you're going to get beat. Wisconsin's defense is better than it's been or than it was last year. Last year it was a sieve. So it's amazing what we're looking at with these two teams so far. Who you got in this one?
I kind of want to see what Michigan does in that first quarter, because the one thing we can guarantee in this game is Jonathan Taylor is going to get the ball a lot, right? That's the most consistent thing. But Michigan's defense has done a really good job against Taylor when you look at what his numbers are against Big Ten teams. I still got Wisconsin because I trust one guy, and that is Jonathan Taylor. On the field offensively, I know what I'm going to get. I have no idea what we're going to get from Michigan. I don't know if that bye is going to give us the opportunity to see a little bit more of Dylan McCaffrey. I have no feel for Michigan, and it sounds like you have the same thing. You have no feel for what Michigan's going to do offensively.
No, and I would play McCaffrey more. I would. And I would use Shea's athleticism. I would just find a way to – I also don't think Michigan is what they were defensively the last couple years. I don't think they're as strong as they've been. And I think this offense with Wisconsin has done a much better job early in the season, not just pounding Jonathan Taylor straight ahead. They've used him in the screen game. They've used him in the pass game more than they had in the past. And I think that's just another way to get that phenomenal freak show in space that's going to equal good things for Wisconsin. And it's amazing. It's amazing to see what Jim Harbaugh's offense has become when it used to be a guy that we considered a cut above almost everybody in his profession offensively.
Yeah.
Literally, we used to think that, and now they can't manufacture anything.
Right? And that's what Michigan desperately needed when they brought him in. It was, hey, no matter what, we know what we're going to get. We have an identity now back with this program. That's all the way back to Bo, right? And now this season, the way it started, I have no idea what Michigan's identity is on offense. And it's to me, it's kind of ridiculous that we're at this point right now in the Harbaugh tenure at Michigan that we have no concept of what the identity of the program is moving forward. The only identity we have is when it comes to games against ranked teams, Harbaugh's teams don't show up. And that has to change. That has to change this weekend. So I think you and I are on the same page. We're both picking Wisconsin. We're both picking Utah so far out the gate. Now, really good, sneaky good. Now, when I say sneaky, because I think most of the attention is on Michigan, Wisconsin at noon, and then the nightcap of the Georgia, Notre Dame game. We'll be back in a minute with Pollock to preview Auburn and Texas A&M. But first, a word from Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot during tailgates. Charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc., etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, and unexpected weather. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. By the way, I want to remind everyone for Monday, our loyal listeners can submit questions that Herbie will answer on the next podcast. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions, and the best questions will make the air. Now back to the show. Auburn A&M, and you talk about two teams with brutal schedules, and Auburn for the next 5 games, 4 of them on the road. They're going on the road here to College Station. Bo Nix, another big challenge. What do you see in this matchup?
First of all, I'm not scared of the moment for Bo Nix. I think he showed me week one against Oregon. He's a gamer. He's a baller. I will say this. Last week was the first time you saw the running game take over for Auburn, and it was much needed. They had 3 guys over 100 yards, and they look like the Auburn teams we've seen in the past that used to line up and smash people. I think this is interesting because Texas A&M is physical up front. They got a bunch of bodies they can rotate in and out. They're physical. They're going to hit you in the mouth. I think they've shown you they can stop the run with Travis Etienne, and I think they've shown you that since Jimbo Fisher took over and Elko came with him a year ago. This defense is good. It's really good. It's much improved year after year from what we've seen. The bodies look better. They look more in shape. The defensive front seven looks better. So I think Auburn, it's going to be Bo Nix. Is he going to be able to play great? Is he going to be able to throw the ball 20, 30 times? Because if that's a formula of him throwing it 20, 30 times, I would like A&M's chances. I think A&M has a chance and a big opportunity here to beat up on Auburn. And I know Auburn fans, you know, aren't going to like that and they'll be upset. And Gus Malzahn will probably be on the hot seat the day after they lose, for God's sakes, because that's the way it works with Auburn coaches. But I really favor A&M here, and almost a lot of the facets of the game, I favor A&M.
And you haven't even mentioned Kellen Mond. Is he the difference in a game like this?
Well, not the way he played against Clemson. I mean, he played really poorly.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
He could be the difference in the raw. Listen, Kellen Mond, people went over the top crazy last year when they saw him against Clemson because he played out of his mind. He played unbelievable. Got probably 3 or 4 breaks that you'll never get again to, with some tip passes and some stuff that happened his direction. But he's gonna have to be more efficient in the pocket and more efficient as a passer and still make those plays with his feet when they're there. But I mean, Kellen Mond, I hesitate. If people think he's one of the better quarterbacks in college football, he's not. I mean, he's still learning and growing. Jimbo's definitely done a good job of making that offense more formidable, making him better. But you know, he's not. It's not like he's setting the world on fire with completions or touchdowns. He's got 5 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, and it's not like his completion percentage has been through the roof and big plays have been through the roof. He's kind of been okay, but against Clemson, he was not just okay. Turned the ball over, and you know, couldn't go down the field and completed less than 60% of his passes and looked just okay.
So who you got in this matchup?
I got A&M. And actually, the road game, I think, road team in this game has won the last 5, I want to say,
yeah,
something like
they've
that.
They've done really well. No, I think it's 6 of 7, right? I think it's 6 of 7 in this series.
Something like that. But I think I know the hard part is when you say A&M's offense versus Auburn's defense, because Auburn's defense is still absolutely filthy. I mean, it's still really, really good. And how much does Kellen Mond, how much does Kellen Mond make plays and not turn the ball over? The good news is they've seen somebody very physical already. You know, they just saw Clemson and they've seen a really good football team. I don't think that ever, you know, hurts. I think Jimbo Fisher dials up enough offensive plays and variety to make big plays to Osborne and some of those guys on the outside, and the height of those wide receivers, they come down with a few balls and they win by seven.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it's going to be a close game, and I think that we'll see the dynamics of both quarterbacks.
Well, I hate that you're with me on three picks so far.
I know. Exactly. But I'm with you on this, and one of the reasons why is I think location where they're playing, and I'm a big fan of Elko, so I look forward to seeing what he does to try to kind of confuse, I don't want to say Malzahn, but Bo in that environment. I'm with you. I have A&M in a very close game. I don't know if about 7 points. I'm going to say around probably a field goal, and let's make it even more exciting. All right, the big game.
That's what to get out there. That's what to get out there on a limb.
Oh, stop it! Come on, let's get to the big game here in Athens, your hometown, of course. Georgia hosting Notre Dame, and I want to talk to you a little bit about we talked about Georgia on Wednesday. I want to talk to you about what's at stake here for Notre Dame. Because you brought up a point about for Clemson, hey, just put them in the playoff because who are they going to face from here on out? If Notre Dame were to win this game, you can make a case the way the rest of the schedule shakes out that this has much bigger playoff implications for Notre Dame than Georgia in a matchup like this, considering that Georgia down the line will get a shot at potentially Alabama. For me, This is for Brian Kelly to get in the playoff. If they get over Georgia, they have a clear shot to get in the playoff again like last year.
That Stanford-USC challenge doesn't really look that difficult, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Notre Dame no. And when you look at the end of the season, too, they got Boston College, I think, which and Virginia Tech, which was so far, too, has been looking bad. But you know, they have Virginia next week, which is – a good challenge. I think Virginia is a really, really good football team. Tough to play Virginia right after you play a physical Georgia team, too. But no, you're absolutely right. They still got Michigan, you know, down the road, and Michigan maybe turns it around. But, you know, listen, if they lose, they're probably going to be out of the conversation. I think Notre Dame, when you're not in a conference, they're going to be a team every, because if they lost a game last year, they would have been behind people. They would have been behind a two-loss Georgia, probably. They probably legit would have been. I mean, that's, they have to be undefeated if they're going to get into this playoff this season, and so this is a huge test. But listen, you go down here and beat Georgia at their place, and you slip up to Virginia, who's a top 15 team, and Virginia loses a couple more games, and you might still be in the mix. But if you lose to Georgia and you get curb stomped to Georgia, yeah, you can put the playoffs to bed.
Yeah, are you expecting to see that? What do you expect to see?
I tell you what, here's what I expect to see. Georgia is better at almost every position on the field. Georgia has a far superior defensive line, a superior secondary, a superior running back, a quarterback that you say is superior. So why should this game be really close? It's in Athens. I mean, what points to this game they can keep it close? I don't see it. Georgia should win this game by 14 points. They are clear and away the better team. So, you know, listen, that's a lot of pressure, too, and that's a lot of, you know, you to beat a good team is tough regardless, but, you know, Georgia definitely has the talent and they have the experience. All these guys have been in big games, and Kirby's recruited class after class, and this is why they came here, and I feel like they should be able to take care of business.
Close game?
No.
No.
I mean, I don't consider – do you consider 14-21 close?
No, not at all.
I think Georgia should win this game by two touchdowns.
But there could be a late touchdown to kind of make it look like it's a 14-point game. But, you know, it could be one of those games where it's tight for three quarters and then Georgia just continues to dominate, I think, with the ground game and pound and pound and pound. So I'm with you again. So right now we're lockstep.
Oh, geez.
Four for four.
Oh, for four, we're done.
I think Georgia's. I think it's going to be a close game up until the fourth quarter, and then Georgia's going to extend themselves and win by double digits. So right now, things are not looking good for us here, Pollock. We'll be back in a minute with Pollock to preview Tennessee and Florida, but first a word from Cintas. More than 1 million businesses trust Cintas to help them open their doors with confidence. Get Cintas and get ready for the workday. Learn how Cintas can help get your business ready at Cintas.com. Cintas provides a wide range of products and services that enhances a customer's image and helps keep their facilities and employees clean, safe, and looking their best. Cintas has the products to help your employees stay safe and apparel programs that convey the right image. With products and services including uniforms, mats, mops, restroom supplies, first aid and safety products, fire extinguishers and testing, and training and compliance courses, Cintas helps customers get ready for the workday. Its customer base is about as broad as it gets, including hotel chains, airlines, college universities, healthcare facilities, retailers, manufacturers, and local car repair shops. For more than 90 years, the company has worked to help businesses big and small look more professional and run more smoothly. Cintas can help your businesses run with efficiency, delivering uniforms, installing products, and replenishing supplies so you don't have to. Cintas focuses on the details so you can focus on keeping your business running smoothly. Focus on what you do best and leave the rest to Cintas. Cintas currently employs more than 43,000 people and operates over 500 locations across the U.S. and Canada. Cintas is a proud Fortune 500 company that is involved in over 400 charitable causes and community events. Now back to the show. In the 90s, this was the matchup. It was one of the best matchups. And, of course, the coaches back then in the background and Spurrier taking his jabs. Tennessee at Florida. The reason why I bring this up is because the Gators are coming off, you know, a thrilling win against Kentucky where they lose Felipe Franks. And Kyle Trask now gets the start. We're talking about a guy that doesn't have a lot of reps, but stuck around. Dan Mullen, we'll talk about the transfer portal and said, Kyle stuck with us. He could have left, but he stuck with us. But Kyle has a history of injuries. When you look at Kyle Trask and you look at him in this offense up against Tennessee in the swamp, what's your first impression?
I think first of all, you got to give the kid so much credit and not just for sticking around and being a team guy, because he's shown that too, because he could have transferred, went somewhere else. But how about just the toughness and the ability to come in? I mean, you saw Slovis week when he first came in for JT Daniel. He didn't look good. Like, nope. It's hard to not be ready for a moment, Kevin, and be inserted in. And how about being down 11? Like, just you're down 11. Hey, Trask, let's get in there and sling the pill around a little bit. But yeah. Unbelievable job being ready out the gates. You can tell he's got a little mobility. He's not as mobile as Franks is. He's got a good arm. You can tell he can throw the football down the field. Awesome story on him was in The Athletic this past week of he sat behind De'Eriq King in the state of Texas playing high school football and didn't complain, didn't transfer, always came in at half because they were blowing half the people out, and came in and always played well, and just was talked to, and King talked about how he was always the first one in the building and he pushed him to be better. He's that kind of guy, and so I'm very interested to see this Florida team. I think there's a lot of teams, Kevin, if you point to Alabama, LSU, Georgia, all these teams I can point to, OU, I will not say put in that category. All these teams, Texas, if their quarterback, starting quarterback got hurt, I would say they're done. USC, I said they were done when JT Daniel got hurt. Florida's not done. I don't think this takes Florida out of the equation. I don't think Felipe Franks put himself in that kind of category as a guy that is a baller consistently. He showed flashes, but he also showed flashes of inconsistency. I think you're going to see Emory too, by the way. I don't think it's just going to be Trask. I think you're also going to see Dan Mullen use creativity and use Emory, his backup, who was a freshman a year ago that got some time, but dude's dynamic, can fly, can really, really run. I think that can't hurt your run game at all when you got a guy that you can enter like that. It hurts your throw game, obviously, but they need Tony back healthy as well. He's got the shoulder, and he's a guy that can fly and do things in the Wildcat and help your run game, but this doesn't bury Florida for me.
Okay, so you're mentioning Emory Jones, and Mullen's been super high on this kid. He's the perfect quarterback in Mullen's system. The one thing that has stunned me about Florida, is they're not running the ball consistently. I mean, P. Ryan, he's got 120 yards on the ground, but they don't. When you look at the talent of that backfield, they have not been able to be consistent running the football early in this season. And you say you got Florida still, you're not counting them out. Are you talking about the SEC East and the battle against Georgia? What are you exactly talking about where you're not counting them out?
I'm not counting them out to be exactly what I thought they'd be, to be a 9-10 win team. I think they have that. They're not going to beat Georgia. I mean, I don't think anybody thought that coming. I mean, some people might have thought that coming into the season, but I mean, I think they still have the ability to be the second best team in the SEC East and still have a productive season and a productive year for Dan Mullen and those guys. I just don't think offensively, I don't think they're going to be able to be as dynamic as they need to be. Now, listen, maybe Emory Jones comes in here and sets the world on fire and everybody and everything changes and Dan Mullen's system becomes just nuts, crazy, wild, freaky good and freaky Dak Prescott, Nick Fitzgerald looking offense and things change. But I think Florida's going to be good, but I don't think they're going to be Georgia good.
All right, so I imagine we're going to be 5-for-5 here. We're both going Gators here in the swamp.
Yes, unfortunately.
that dramatic pause said enough. All right, another matchup. And we may differ here. Oklahoma State in Austin against Texas. Cowboys have won 5 straight in Austin, the longest winning streak ever by any school at Texas. And Oklahoma State can score some points. How are you looking at this matchup?
Well, who you got? So you said we might.
Nah, I'm not telling you. I'm not telling you. I want to hear what you got to say first in this matchup.
First of all, Texas defense does not show me anything, and they're banged up in the secondary. Does not show me anything to consistently make me believe in them. But as long as Sam Ellinger's quarterback, I'm going with Texas. I mean, he's just a tough sucker and just makes things very difficult on offenses. And he's just everything you want in that position, man. He's not everything you want from a throwing perspective, but he's got all the intangibles. He's super daggum smart. He's super efficient. He's throwing the ball already this season better than he has, you know, in the past. And he's going to continue to, and the weapons are going to continue to, I think, develop for this team. But I mean, as long as you're going to give me Sam Ellinger, I'm going to take him. I mean, they've got Eagle on the outside that's starting to develop. I mean, we talked about Johnson, and we talked about who's going to pick up the slack for little Jordan Humphrey, but Duvernay's been on fire. I mean, he's shown you some serious ability to take small passes and go the distance, and he's had breakouts. And, you know, Ingram in the backfield has created some big plays, not a whole lot, but he's more than capable of making big plays. And Eagle on the outside, you saw him against LSU, big 6'4" target that they can catch and make plays. You know, listen, if you go to Oklahoma State, they can make them plays too now. I mean, Chuba Hubbard's been amazing. He's got almost 550 yards rushing in a couple games this season, for goodness sakes. He's gotten over 200 twice out of 3 games, and that's crazy. And then Wallace on the outside too, he's averaging like 29 yards a reception. And so Oklahoma State has the firepower, and this is not going to be a low-scoring affair. But in the end, I just have a hard time going against Sam Ellinger. So tell me you're going Oklahoma State, please.
I'm not. I'm actually and that's the difference, because Ellinger can answer back. When you look at his numbers, 11 touchdowns, no picks. I know that he has the loss, or his team has the loss against LSU, but he should still be in the Heisman conversation. And we're going to learn a lot more about Texas and how they can handle some adversity and with this defense, because I think Oklahoma State, it's going to be a shootout. I think that's the one thing that we can guarantee in a game like this. We're not going to see a lot of defense, because you mentioned Hubbard. Hubbard's been fantastic, and they're averaging nearly 50 points a game. And now you get the chance to face that Texas defense. This could be one of those 55 to 52 games, and we're in our third overtime in Austin. That's what I'm expecting to see on ABC in prime time.
I'm going Oklahoma State all the way. Everything about it. Sanders is amazing. Chuba Hubbard, Tyron Wallace. I mean, there's no. They're winning in Austin every time they go there. I'm going Oklahoma State, no doubt.
Oh, just to go against the win. I'm with you. I'm with you with Texas, because I know deep down you want Texas, and you're not going to argue with it, because Ellinger's just way too good in a situation like that. So you can't escape us. We're going to go 6-for-6. We're going to go 6-0 this week on our matchups. And honestly, I think we're going to have a lot of answers when it comes to playoff shakeup here, when it comes to Georgia, Notre Dame, and potentially Auburn, A&M, and a little bit more with Michigan. We'll have an idea between Michigan and Wisconsin. Pollock, listen, enjoy everybody coming to your house this weekend. Enjoy all the game day stuff, and looking forward to seeing you guys on Saturday.
You the man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate Pollock for joining us. Cannot wait for these matchups coming your way. We also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate and Cintas. And a reminder for you on Monday, our loyal listeners can submit questions that Herbie will answer on the very next podcast. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions, and the best questions will make the air. Herbie will provide the answers. Big thanks to our producer, Gabe Bassain, as I continue to just basically go through bags and bags of cough drops battling this cold. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock, and of course, rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Enjoy the games, and I'll talk to you on Monday.